Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of the Type 1 Radio Lounge. Hopefully, very shortly, we'll be joined by Mark Leeds. But for now, we've got Sonic.
Hello.
And Swami Sivananda Giri.
Namaste and blessings.
Good. Well, Marty's call is failing, but I'm sure he'll be along very shortly. So, tonight we're going to have a lovely chat with...
I'm going to have to get out my calculator.
Oh, God, yeah, I know.
I can't count to 21 without taking my shorts off.
Well, I was looking at Marty's stuff today, and you can just do it on your hands.
Really?
Caller. Maybe that's him.
What's that?
Have we got a caller?
We've got a caller. All right.
Hello, 218.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello there. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I might be calling in. I just listened to Jay Parker here, and I'm not sure if the guest you're talking to, but what I was going to share about would be appropriate for today. But otherwise, I was just going
to
ask.
Anything you wish to share, my friend, will be perfectly appropriate.
All right. Yep. Well, Jay's talking about the eugenics movement, of course, here in this video I'm listening to, and I...
Hey, who are we talking to, by the way?
You're talking to Matthias from the wonderful state of
Minnesota. Where are you calling from?
Yep, from Minnesota.
All right, fantastic.
Yes, and I came across, after going through a book titled Psychiatrist, The Men Behind Hitler, and in there was a little article written in the New Ulm, Minnesota paper, dated August 1st of 1933. My dad was 16 days old on that day, and it's written on Minnesota Eugenics Society paper, and it's written by the president of the Minnesota Eugenics Society there at the University of Minnesota, and it's the letter is written to Chancellor Adolf Hitler, Berlin, Germany. Honorable Chancellor, it goes, I enclose a clipping from the Minneapolis Journal of Minnesota, United States of America, relating to and praising your plan to stamp out mental inferiority among the German people. And I trust you will accept my sincere wish that your effort along that line will be a great success and will advance the eugenics movement in other nations as well as in Germany. Sincerely, C.F. Deit, M.D., the president of the Minnesota Eugenics Society. Again, 1933. Well, again, my name is Matthias, and my last name is Schultz. And the fourth Matthias, the first one left Germany 175 years ago after being born in Germany 195 years ago. So reading this takes on not only, of course, for his German people, but, of course, we know what the eugenics movement is up to.
Right.
They're not really particular whether you're German, French, or what nationality. But anyhow, I just thought I'd call in and share that with you.
Very
and
interesting.
Your listeners.
And
well,
hey,
I
would remind you that Jay is on Sunday evenings.
Okay.
So give us a holler tomorrow night.
I would do just that. I would love to do that there, sir, and share with Jay and you and your wonderful listeners at that time. Okay.
Yeah, outstanding, Matthias. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Matthias.
Well,
thank
you very much for being faithful and doing what's called upon you to do. So we'll look to talk to you sometime soon.
Outstanding.
And stay on the line if you want to.
Yeah, stay on the line if you want to listen in. It's going to be an awesome show.
Yeah, if you want to hang out with us. This is the lounge. We're just chilling.
Again, that's one thing I can afford to do is pay attention. And I would love to stay on and listen. Thank you.
Outstanding. Thank you.
Yep, you're welcome.
All right, I'm sorry, Sonic. You were intro and Marty and that kind of thing.
I was just saying that I was looking at his stuff today, one of his sites, and you don't really need a calculator because you have your hands, and the alphabet just goes on your hands. Mm. So your thumb start in A, and then you have three down each finger because you've got knuckles, and then same on the other hand, ending in your thumb being Z.
And isn't there 26 different parts to your hand, or to both hands, 13 of each hand?
Yeah, it must be, because that adds up.
I just did that. I just did the alphabet on my knuckles, and it works just fine. Huh. This will be interesting, because, see, I've always been mathematically crippled. I mean, I've just never been good at math at all. I used to have a watch with a calculator on it because I didn't want to have to, you know. I mean, I got in trouble when I was a kid, little kid, like grade school. I hid the flashcards that I was assigned to take home to practice my math because I was so bad at it. I hid them in a ditch on the way between my house and school so my parents wouldn't see them and make me do them. Yeah, then they got all wet, and that didn't work out so good. But
well, it looks like we have Marty with us at last. Marty Leeds?
Oh. Did we have him?
We have him. Oh, no. Cole Spills. Oh, dear.
His picture's there, at least.
His picture's there, yeah. He's looking good. Oh, he's got...
So,
I'll send him another message.
is he there now?
Hello?
Hello, Marty! Yay!
Hey, sorry, guys. My computer crashed twice on me.
Yeah. That's
no problem. Hey, they do that stuff to us every now and again. You do much blog talk?
No, I don't. I only do
Oh, well,
podcasts.
This sort of thing, but be prepared because technical and sound issues aplenty on Blog Talk Radio sometimes.
Oh, okay.
Especially depending
conspiracy.
On certain subject matter. By the way, this is Swami from Free Your Mind. How you doing?
Hey, Swami. How's it going?
Okay, so far. glad
Steve.
To have you on.
I'm Steve. Marty, we conversed, I think it was last year. You were going to come on the show, and unfortunately your dog died.
Oh, yes.
Remember that? Sorry.
Yes,
that.
I remember.
Sorry to bring
well.
That up.
No, it's all right. Yeah.
But you're here now, and it's all good.
You want to just kick him in the shin while you're at it, Steve?
Yeah, well, the bad news just keeps coming, because I just, prior to Sonic telling me you were coming on the show, I'd lent your books to a friend of mine who's doing research to write a book of his own. So, and inside was all my notes.
Oh.
So, we're going to be
these things happen, man.
We're going to be winging it tonight, but I'm sure you're going to fly like an eagle.
Yeah, don't put too much pressure on me.
No, okay. Well, we've still got the jingles be prepared for you, so...
Three, that's a magic number.
So if you play that twice, it's 33. So welcome, Marty. It's lovely to talk to you. And I read both your books, and they're fantastic. I haven't read you've got a new one coming out?
Yeah, The Peacock's Tales, that's the newest one. Yeah, The Alchemical Writings of Body.
What about the follow-up to The Pie, The Great
One? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have Volume 1, Volume 2, and then The Peacock's Tale is the newest one.
Right.
So.
And is that effectively Volume 3 of the trilogy, if you like?
No, I'm going to do a Volume 3, but it's further exploration of the ideas.
Yeah.
It's kind of in a different context.
You sent me an email saying you'd done a third one, but did that not come to fruition then?
No, that is the third book. I'm going to do a Volume 3 on the series, though. That's the next book I'm working on. So I have Volume 1, Volume 2, and then this one, The Peacock's Tales, which basically just gives me, it's just a little bit more like personal anecdotes and things like that of my own story and how I came to this, understand this information and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So
well, when you read a book and you can actually tangibly do something with it, it's fantastic because in, I think it's the Volume 1, there's you can go out and look at Draco. because I'm not too much up in my astrology sort of thing, but very simplistic way that you put it. I went outside and saw it. I thought, fucking brilliant, wow.
Oh, thanks, yeah.
Yeah, that's real, real.
It's really just a culmination of, research over the years of looking at, tons of authors and researchers and just trying to put it in this very concise, straightforward, very simple manner.
Yeah, you make no secret of you're not an ex or you're not a trained mathematician.
No, not at all.
You've pretty much come up with this yourself, haven't you? And also, your form of Gematra is your own as well, is it not?
It's not mine. I don't take, nobody else has used it as far as I know. No one else has discovered this. So that is, unique, I guess. But
my understanding of Gematra is like 1 to 9, then you do the alphabet down, and obviously the fox is the 666. But you do it a slightly different way with, you go up and down, don't you?
Yeah, 1 through 7, and then, kind of mirror the numbers or using symmetry, basically, within the numbers, yeah. Most, Chaldean numerology is what it's usually called, but that's 1 through 9, which I actually cover the ideas of, that basic numerological principle in the books as well. But, yeah, as far as the gematria is concerned, it uses 1 through 7, yeah.
Yeah. What made you come up with using the 7th, then?
Just my study of numbers, really. Basically in the study of sacred geometry, when I use 1 through 7, the first time that I put the numbers to the letters, I use the motif that we see in the Holy Bible with the 7 days of creation. And then, of course, this is not even, it's not just exclusive to the Bible as well, because, you have the Enuma Elish, which is 7 tablets of creation. And, of course, if you do any sort of, comparative mythology, syncretism, that sort of thing, the number 7 is just prevalent in so many mythologies and so many cultures. So that focus on 7 was pretty important.
Yeah, 7 days and 7 heavens and all that.
Yeah,
7 chakras.
Yeah, 7 chakras, exactly, 7 notes of the major scale, 7 deadly sins, 7 colors of the rainbow, 7 days a week, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, we see this all the time, In fact, I'm just finishing up reading Morals and Dogma by Albert Pike right now, and there's pages.
Oh, there's some light reading.
Yeah, some light reading. I read that with my women's journal, So yeah, in the middle of it, there's 3 pages where that's all he talks about is the number 7. I mean, he just says here's this, here's the Chaldeans, here's the Sumerians, here's the Egyptians, here's the, and he just lists 7, 7, 7, 7 again and again and again. And in sacred geometry, heaven is a circle as a 3, and earth is a 4 as a square. And so 3 plus 4 is, of course, 7, and that leads, to, the Freemasonic square encompasses, so.
And G, of course.
Well, and Steve just hipped me to your counting the alphabet off on your knuckles.
Yeah, basically, I don't use the numbers of the phalanges of your hands or the little segments of your hands, but the idea is that you can actually put them, you can put the 26 letters of the English alphabet onto your hands, almost as establish.
Yeah, I was like, that's amazing. I never knew that. I've had them all my life and never figured that out.
Honestly, it's so interesting because we use our hands all the time, and how many people even look down at them and, even count the number of segments on your hands. Mm. I mean, most people don't, and so it's extremely interesting. We're built off these, I would say, numeric templates.
See, now there's got to be a way to win $5 in a bar with that.
I'm sure there is. Yeah, yeah. How can you make 14 equal 5? There's a question, right?
I knew we'd just leave it to you, and you'll give us the way to do it. I know.
I'm going to have to use that next time.
And so 14 into 5, that would be adding the 1 and the 4.
Yeah, exactly. And then you could just literally use your hands, It's numbers are magic, man.
Certainly are. I was pretty good at maths at school, but I never really took it to mean anything other than counting out your dollars that you made at the end of the week, or how many minutes it was until school ended.
Yeah, that's so, about it, right?
Yeah. I was pretty good at working that out.
Yeah, our school systems, they're not educational systems. No, they're indoctrination systems.
They're memory tests, aren't they? Yeah,
plain and simple, have you guys seen that whole, the Common Core that they're using in the United
I haven't
States
looked
here?
Into that yet. I'm scared to.
Yeah, it's scary. It is. I mean, they basically perverted mathematics. They perverted, I mean, even how they teach the Constitution, things like that. I mean, it's the most clear-cut case of indoctrination I've ever seen.
Yeah.
You know? And this is the standard.
Once upon a time, some terrorists made a country.
Yeah, that's about it, right?
Yeah, I know. I was trying to teach my kids, you know, simple long division and stuff like that, and they were just going, what the hell are you doing? That's not how you do it. You do it like this, blah, blah, and they just showed me this unbelievably complicated system of sort of working sums out. I was like, you got to be kidding me. You know, because I knew that stuff before I went to school. You know, I knew how to count and subtract pretty much before I started, you know, junior school.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, you know, so.
Most of what I do is basic math. I mean, I don't really do any algebra or trigonometry and things like that. And I think that a good portion of the world of how we can understand the world comes from these basic mathematical principles. And I think that just like most things in our world, they've been overcomplicated. You know, it's over-intellectualized. It's that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And when you break it down, these things are, you know, geometry, the geometry I'm showing, the mathematics I'm showing, very simple, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, your books, the Pi of the Great Works, are, you know, just shows it in very simple sort of terms and how it all connects to Pi and how it all connects to numbers, basically, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Pi, I think, is a cornerstone of our universe. I mean, I think it's one of the main templates that the creator used in creating the universe, you know. And the places that you can see this pop up in this sort of magical way through our language and just through philosophical ideas is just, in to me, is absolutely amazing. I'm you know, I've been working with this for, I don't know, I guess I wrote my first book in the end of 2011, and I'm still shocked by it. Mm. It's still amazing to me, you know. It's not like it ever gets old. So, and it's truly magical. I mean, what it's done for me psychologically and spiritually is just off the chain. You know, it's been the most wonderful journey I've ever made.
Yeah,
sure.
I mean, I was watching your breakdown of Moses today, just to refresh myself on your work sort of thing, and it was just off the chart how you came up with 432.
It's pretty amazing, huh?
I mean, do you know the music sort of tuning changed? Was it 1911 or something like that, from 432 hertz to 444, is it?
That's what I heard, yeah. I don't know the history of it, but...
I mean, I'm a musician myself, so I think I've got a lot of electronic equipment. You can actually change the tuning from, you know, the standard to back to what it was sort of thing, and it is quite incredible how it, you know, it sounds a lot nicer on the ear. I was wondering, do you use that tuning yourself when you do your music?
No, the problem is because everything is tuned to 4,
yeah.
You know, and so if you're going to play along to anything, it's like you have to tune to 440,
yeah.
You know, and that's kind of a problem right now.
Yeah.
You know, I have a friend who's, he has perfect pitch, and he's just a master guitar player. He's just a fantastic musician. And, you know, he was listening to the whole 432, and he was saying that to him it sounds off. It sounds like it's out of tune.
Yeah.
You know, and I was saying, well, that's because you've been fed 440 your entire life. Yeah. Of course it's going to sound a little bit off, you know.
Yeah.
So.
We have a friend who's been on the show, a guy called Yannick Van Dorm, and he works with Earth Resonances. And he came to do some lectures over here, and we put him up. He let him stay here, sort of thing, and he gave us this wind chime as a gift, which is tuned to 432, and it's absolutely beautiful. You know, you can't help yourself just hitting it on your way by, every time you go by.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it's...
beautiful resonance.
Yeah, this is an amazing resonance. But also, Robert Monroe, are you familiar with him?
Yeah, he was kind of a psychic back in the day, wasn't
Yeah, yeah.
Well, he was the astral travel.
Astral projection.
Astral travel, yeah, sure.
Well, he used to get his students to sort of concentrate on this resonance as well, and sort of, you know, that helps to open the pineal gland up and, you know, do all that good stuff.
Did he? I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Was it binaural beats or something it's called?
Hemisync.
Sorry, hemisync. Yeah.
Right, which is binaural beats. It's just his was copyrighted as hemisync.
Okay, right.
Is the term copyrighted to the Monroe Institute.
Monroe Institute, right.
Yeah, I've done one of their meditations, and I had the most peaceful sleep ever. afterwards.
Awesome. Yeah, I learned about Robert Monroe's stuff on Art Bell years and years and years ago.
Yeah, well, I went to a lecture years, nearly 30 years ago now, showing my age, but and this guy who was from California had sort of was doing this lecture on how sort of rock music just couldn't, you know, the way the beat, because if you do a constant 4-4 like that, which mimics the heartbeat, then that's a kind of strength, which is what your Indian shaman kind of beat is. But as soon as you get the offbeat, that makes you weak. That makes your heart start stopping. It does. He does this experiment where you put your arm out and somebody tries to push you down whilst he's doing this heartbeat. And then it changes the beat, and you can actually just take somebody right off their feet by playing them this, offbeat. It's quite incredible.
Really? Do you guys know why they changed it to 440? I mean, I've heard that it was like the Nazis that did it, and that.
Yeah.
It's like I never really trust any of that. So, but I've never heard why particularly that it was changed.
Maybe it's just to slightly shift our consciousness away, just a little bit away from nature, maybe.
Yeah, I was thinking that. Well, watching your lecture today, Marty, kind of sort of when that number was coming up, I was going, "Hang on, that's 432. That's what the tuning used to be, and then it was changed to, I don't know, slant us away from the, you know, bit of eugenics sort of stuff going on there."
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense to me in a conspiratorial aspect for sure. Mm-hmm. I just wondered who did it, you know, who implemented it.
Well, it came from Germany, funnily enough. Yeah, it did actually come from Germany with the Oompa bands.
Really?
Okay. I couldn't be sure, but I know I've heard that. I mean, I've heard along the conspiracy lines that it was the Nazis, but
we
all fell into line pretty quickly, so, you know.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys saw the Hebrew alphabet video that I just did, where actually you, adding up the 22 digits of pi actually adds up to 432 as well in the English words.
Wow.
Yeah. So you have, 22 being extremely important because of the number of letters of the Hebrew alphabet, of course. And then I actually just took this right to 22 digits of pi, 3.14159, et cetera. And, yeah, it equals 432 as well. Mm. So, for that to be an accident to me is just asinine, you know?
Yeah.
I mean,
are you familiar with Dennis Fetchel?
Yeah, actually, I am. I was on his
show. You were on his show, were you? Really? Okay, well.
Yeah, I did his show. This is probably a couple of years back now. But, yeah, I like Dennis. I highlighted his breakdown of Pi in Pi the Great Work. But actually, it turned out not to even be his. He actually learned it from somebody else, as I found out on the show. But, yeah, I know Dennis, yeah.
Because he does an amazing breakdown on the Menorah, sort of adding up to Pi.
Yeah, he actually, I asked him about that on the show, and apparently he learned that from this numerologist that would kind of go from town to town and do these sort of like lectures, like the presentations. So apparently that's not even his. Apparently he learned that from some numerologist, like I said, but I'm not sure what the guy's name is. But yeah, it's totally, I mean, just yet another instance where you can take symbolism into mathematics, you know, that you're, you know, whether it's the Jewish menorah or whether it's, you know, the Freemasonic square and compasses, or whether it's the Star of David, you know, to use these symbols on the map itself, which I think is just insanely interesting.
Well, you mentioned the Hebrew sort of letter there. I'm just actually reading a book called the Rabbi's Tarot.
Oh, okay.
Which is a kind of break, and it's taking you through all the tarot cards and giving you the numbers. I mean, I'm only on sort of chapter 4 at the minute, which is, you know, not very far into it. But that was actually mentioning the hands, the humans are the only ones with a workable thumb, and that's what gives us the sort of edge on all the other animals, because we have this,
Yeah, they can't flick our bicks.
They can't give us a thumb up sort of thing, and the thumb is very, very, very integral to our, you know, minds developing, basically, so. Amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it allows us to manipulate the material world. It allows us to make paper and write. It allows us to, you know, do everything that we, you know, that allows us this higher consciousness in one respect.
Well,
you know, whether it's we stood up for monkeys, or whether we were created, or whatever it is you believe, our hands are obviously important, you know.
Texting?
Yeah, and texting.
Well, I suppose because before it was opposable, things were in 2D then, and when that thumb was able to move around, that gave us a 3D sense. Perhaps.
Sure. Yeah.
So let's get into some of your work. Tell us about some interesting other numbers, like maybe Phi.
Phi, as in P-H-I?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know it's Steve Bychik. Is that your real name, or is that...
No, I'm Steve. My wife is Bychik.
Oh, okay. Interesting. So, yeah, which you have, so Phi and Chick, so P-H-I and C-H-I is both 365 in the cipher. And, of course, that's 365 days in the solar year. So, and when you add, so P-H-I, which is, of course, we get this from the Greeks, and this is the golden mean, golden ratio, golden proportion that all of nature is built on, basically, you know?
Yeah.
Phi, yeah, being 365, well, 3 plus 6 plus 5 is also 14. And so you have the idea that the 365 days of the solar year, in one respect, adding up numerologically, is on your hand. You know, so 3 plus 6 plus 5 is 14. And, of course, your hand is built off Phi. It's built off, you know, the Fibonacci sequence. So and so it's like basically this key mathematical principle that we see all throughout. It's in eddies and rivers and tornadoes, and it's on the human body. We see it's in the botanical kingdom, et cetera, ad infinitum. You know, this is something that's right on your hands, you know. What's interesting about the Phi is it's called the golden mean, right? It's called the divine mean, golden mean. Well, mean is a balancing point. It's a balancing point between two extremes. That's what it means. That's what mean means. So the idea that we find Phi in the number 5. So you go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Phi is the balance between the 1 and the 10, you could say, or the 0 and the 10, the 1 and the 9, the 2 and the 8, etc. It's that balancing point. And so the fact that you have it's called the golden mean, and you find this in the pentagram, you find the 1.618 in the pentagram, or Phi in the pentagram, is it's really saying that within, even in the language, it's telling you that there's a deeper meaning there. There's a very profound meaning to the fact that it's called the mean. It's like asking the question, does your life have meaning? Well, in one respect, it's saying, does your life have balance? Because that's exactly what mean means. So is life balanced? Is there meaning to life? Well, fuck yeah, there is. Because our entire universe is balanced, that there's this exquisite equilibrium that permeates all of our existence, you know? And so it's like, so when we look at the spiritual context of this and go into the language, bring in the geometry, take a look at the arithmomancy, I guess, it's the divinity of mathematics. And you bring all of this stuff together, it's like you almost get this answer, you know? It's like you want to ask the question, does life have meaning? Yes, it does. Absolutely does. Because it has balance, you know?
Yeah. And that is the Phi ratio.
And that's the Phi. And that's why it was called the golden mean. And that's why it's called the golden proportion, or the divine proportion, because there's something absolutely divine about it.
Mm.
You know?
Hi there, Marty. This is Bychik here.
Hi, how's it going?
Okay, I just wanted to say I'm not golden, but I am mean.
That's just standing on one foot.
She's lying, she has golden.
We are stardust.
We're all golden, we're all
sweet. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I like Joni Mitchell's song better, or her version better than the Crosby, Stills, Nash, but...
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I like Matthew Selling Comfort's version better than Crosby, Stills, Nash.
What's that?
Matthew Selling Comfort. Do you know him?
No, I don't.
All right. He
covered that tune?
He did.
Great tune, yeah.
Yeah, oh, great. Amazing song, yeah.
Yeah, I've been a big Joni Mitchell fan for a long time, so I think she's just one of the most fantastic songwriters.
Yeah.
I mean, without her music, I mean, just reading her lyrics to me are poetry. You know, it's like you don't even need the music, and then the music on top of it. So,
well,
yeah, one of my favorite songwriters. So.
Well, didn't she use 33 different types of tuning?
Did she really?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, like through open.
Yeah, I'm not sure how steeped in the occult or anything she was. You know, I know a lot of musicians back in the day in that time period were, obviously into the occult.
I'm sure you had a rough idea.
yeah.
Coming from Laurel Canyon and all.
Exactly. Yeah, right. So.
Oh, she was in that crew?
Absolutely. She was one of
those.
Oh, yeah.
She was one of
those. Oh, see, we've made mention of the Laurel Canyon thing numerous times on this show, but I wasn't deep into it, so I didn't know who all was part of that crew.
Yeah.
Yeah, she dated David Geffen for a while, I know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so obviously into the whole, yeah.
Yeah.
Laurel Canyon.
She dated all of them. She dated David Crosby and Graham Nash and pretty much everyone, all the Eagles.
She's got some stories to tell, isn't she?
Yeah, yeah. I did actually watch an interview with her recently, and she doesn't like to sing her songs anymore because she reckoned they were never finished, but she'll show her paintings because she said her paintings are complete, but her songs are, when she hears them, she just cringes because she wanted to put another guitar part on that bit and another more lyrics and stuff like that. So she's upset with her music, which is quite weird because it is very good.
No, yeah, to me it's just perfect, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, songwriters like that, like, especially with, like, I mean, you know, even Bob Dylan, though I have some problems with Bob Dylan, but you know, guys like Bob Dylan or Townes Van Zandt or guys like that, to me, their songs are almost, like, perfect, almost like as if they were written before they even were born or something, and they just kind of picked them out of the ether, you know?
Yeah.
That's what they sound like to me.
Yeah.
And when I try to write, that's what I try to do. You know, I try to find that song that, you know, has already been written, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I know a lot of, I've heard that sentiment from a lot of songwriters as well, guys. Like,
yeah.
Bruce Springsteen have said things like that. It's almost like you're trying to go into that creative astral plane, if you will, and pick out something that's already formed,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
It's a shame, really, that there's that strive for perfection within us, because it ultimately is like trying to find the end of the rainbow. It doesn't really exist. And actually what the world sees from what we produce is something quite beautiful, just from that process of trying to find what seems to be the ultimate perfection for us anyway, on an individual level.
Yeah, I totally agree. Well said. Yeah.
You know, all the songs that I've ever written that I've really enjoyed have been the ones that have just been written in a couple of minutes.
Sure.
You know,
absolutely.
That sounds to me like it's coming out of the ether, you know, coming out of the sort of
yeah,
the creative.
I mean,
sort of
terrible like that because I am quite a perfectionist.
You are a nightmare.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you, because I agree with that too. Like most of the greatest songs I've ever written usually were written within 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's almost like you just opened up the, you know, you're a conduit and you just kind of opened up your doors and you downloaded it. And then you were just there to dictate it. That's what makes the most sense to me.
Yeah.
I mean, for actually talking about the last book that I wrote, that's something that I address head on, is basically the creative process and the process of songwriting. Like, to me, it's, you know, that's just studying it, looking at it, analyzing it over the years. That's the best way I can understand it, that you're really just kind of picking something out of the ether and dictating it or bringing it into fruition, you know? And I put a quote, I got to read this quote here if I can find it. You'll have to give me a second. It's from John Frusciante. He's the guitar player for the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yeah,
I don't, I'm not going to be able to find it now, but he basically says that, I'll have to find it. But basically that same idea, that he says that musicians aren't really, you know, that a musical idea doesn't start in your brain. It starts in another place, and you're just there to bring it out and bring it to fruition. And I just absolutely agree with that.
Mm.
Like a conduit.
Yeah, and I mean, and then you also look at, like,
well,
the Greek
thought. Well, you catch it and translate it into this.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we talked about, like, the Greek philosophy. This is the idea of a daemon, you know? It was like you had an angel, a muse, an anthropos, a daemon. You had this helping guide in that spirit world that you contacted, you know? And, of course, this is not a literalist, you know, we're not being literal here. This is, you know, mysticism. But that, to me, makes a lot of sense. You know,
yeah,
so.
For sure. Do you ever use any of your knowledge that you've sort of gleaned over the years in your songwriting? Like, for instance, I always, when I'm doing sort of techno music, sort of dance music, I always do like 108 BPM, which adds to 9, or 81 BPM, which adds to 9. You know, I always go for 9s.
Sure. I do a little bit of that, but not too much, just because... to me, it's almost like too planned. You know what I mean? I'd rather just have that stuff flow, because if you let it flow, then you know it's coming from nature, and then you know it has that
yeah,
essence beneath it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
So, but I do a little bit of it, but not too much. So,
well, I do that when I mean I write acoustic stuff as well as it's primarily techno I do these days. So I always sort of start with this. You know, you set your BPMs before you start, sort of thing.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
I'll
yeah.
go for, like, you know, like 144 is the top end I'll go for, because that's, like, you know, way too fast.
Sure.
But I'll just go for a 9. I should try a 7, I suppose, some of these days.
Yeah.
Yeah, break it up, man.
I call that the 70-140 variant.
The 70-140?
Yeah.
Well, do you do that as well?
Not. I don't intentionally put a BPM on. Sometimes I write a tune and then change the tempo. And maybe for time signatures, you know, just try various time signatures that are not necessarily 4/4.
Mm.
That's always quite interesting.
Yeah.
Sure.
So you've got a new album out, Marty, yeah?
What's that?
You've got a new record out, I believe?
Yes, the first record. I mean, I made a few records with a band I was in a few years back, but this is my first solo record. So, yeah, it's called Opus Medico Musica.
Yeah.
Which basically means, yeah, work of medical music. And, yeah, you can get it on Amazon and iTunes and that sort of thing. So, I mean, it was just me and a friend, basically. I have a friend that owns a studio. And so we went in and we sequenced all the drums and we played all the you know, the banjo and the bass and the guitar and everything like that. So it was just he and I, basically. So that was a lot of fun. It was pretty freeing. It's not as organic sounding as I would hope, but I basically did it on no money, too. So shoestring budget, so, because that's all I have is shoestring.
We know that budget very well here.
Oh, yeah, right. Pretty much everybody I speak to has that budget.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that is a bit of a problem, because you've actually had to go back to work recently, I heard you say in a recent interview.
Yeah, I've been back at work for like 3 weeks now, something like that, full time. So I basically took about 2 years off full time work. I still worked part time and worked out of my house and that sort of stuff. But and then just kind of subsisted off meager book sales and that sort of thing. So I was kind of forced to go back to work, which is, you know, it's not terrible, but I would much rather be spending my time doing this. You know, yeah. I know.
Well, congratulations on scoring a gig, because there's many who cannot. So
yeah, exactly. You know, I'm kind of grateful for that. Absolutely, I'm not complaining. So, but yeah, I wish I could do this whole time, but the world being what it is, that doesn't really allow for that right now. So hopefully, you know.
Yeah. How well received are your books, by the way?
The people that buy them and read them, almost like thus far, almost like universally, have enjoyed them. You know, I've gotten a great response to the people that have actually sat through them, and, you know, just, I mean, Amazon, I think I've gotten 5 stars on every single book, save for one review or something. But yeah, received very well. It's just kind of a hard thing to sell, you know, because I'm selling mathematics, and most people, as soon as you say mathematics, are like, oh, that's above my head. Oh, I don't want anything to do with that, you know. So that's a huge obstacle in one respect, but it's one I don't mind. It's a challenge I don't mind, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Have you approached any, like, schools or university to get them into libraries there?
You know, the intellectual climate being what it is, I have not, to answer your question, but the intellectual climate being what it is, I don't think that this work will be well received in any of those circles. I really don't.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and I hope I'm wrong. I hope I have to come back on your show in like a year and be like, oh, I'm completely, you know, I missed the boat on that one. But I don't think that linguists or, you know, philologists or mathematicians are ever going to look into this. I don't think Noam Chomsky or Lawrence Krauss or Neil deGrasse Tyson are ever going to give me the time of day. You know, that's just what it is. Yeah. You know, I mean, I hope, like I said, I hope I'm wrong. But
do you think that's because the role specialists within those particular fields, and they don't see the connectedness between all of them?
That's probably one, you know, that's probably part of it for sure.
It's probably more like they won't.
Yeah, I mean, basically, especially with modern, you know, intellectuals, quote-unquote intellectuals, you know, the professorial elite, if you will, they're going to find one thing that they dislike about this, or something that, you know, I'll use a method, whether it's numerological or whether it's some sort of, like, you know, kind of like trick of the, you know, whatever, language or something. They're going to see that, not like it, you know, and then therefore dismiss everything I'm saying. Because that's basically how modern, you know, the modern mind works, you know? I mean, basically, you know, I've heard this this was actually just a few weeks back. I was listening to this lecture on Neil deGrasse Tyson, and he was basically laughing off astrology because he was like, well, ha, 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 there's 13, you know, there's 13 constellations of the zodiac and not 12. So how are we supposed to, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And therefore basically just dismissed astrology in general. And it's like, and I just put this internet meme out about how, you know, Isaac Newton is basically Neil deGrasse Tyson's hero, right? And Isaac Newton was, he was a damned mystic, man. I mean, he was an alchemist. He was an astrologer. He studied sacred geometry. You know, he translated the Emerald Tablet of Hermes, for Christ's sake, you know, with Hermetics being this idea that God gave us this one true theology. And so a guy like Neil deGrasse Tyson, who's, you know, has millions of followers on Facebook, he's widely regarded as this sort of brilliant man and spokesperson for science. Here's a guy that's just kind of almost completely dismissing that those subjects, astrology, sacred geometry, alchemy, the ideas of an intelligent force behind creation, were instrumental in helping Isaac Newton make the discoveries that he made, period. You know, this is how our modern mind thinks. So I'm not going to burn any lean brain tissue to try to convince these people of that that there's legitimacy in at least some of the things I'm doing, you know?
I'm just Googling Neil deGrasse Tyson, and it says that it's calling him an astrophysicist. So surely an astrophysicist should be...
have some astro somewhere?
Yeah, And I mean,
just
don't get me wrong.
You know?
I mean, don't get me wrong. I think he's a brilliant man. I mean, I think he is a smart man. He's obviously very intelligent with science and things like that. But it's this mentality of completely dismissing things that I'm guessing he knows nothing about. You know, I'm guessing he knows nothing about alchemy. I'm guessing he knows nothing about sacred geometry, you know, or has ever really considered these things deeply. And, you know, like I said, that's just how our modern mind thinks.
Yeah, well,
and
I can back that up. I worked in a university last year. I'm a construction worker. And we were working in the physics department, which was right next to the mathematics department. And I asked both the physics department and the mathematics department about the Fibonacci sequence, and they knew nothing about it. They looked through me like, what are you talking about?
Really?
Yeah, it was quite sad, really. Yeah, it was this great big collage made of the Hadron Collider. And I was kind of, you know, talking to them about it, and they weren't up for talking about the Fibonacci sequence or anything such mystical.
Yeah, I mean, when you really get down to the meat and potatoes, you know, the brass tacks of it, there's really nothing mystical about the Fibonacci sequence in general.
No.
It's just, you know, it's like people call it sacred geometry. Well, fuck, man, sacred is just an adjective. It's geometry. You know, I personally think everything's sacred, you know. But you throw sacred in front of something, and it's like, oh, you're a kook, you're a crank, you're a snake oil salesman, you know? It's like, come on, man. Let's be reasonable here, you know? So, yeah, I actually talked to my brother who, when I was first getting into this stuff, and my brother's a smart guy, you know? He's got his shit together in life, you know? And he's basically kind of like an engineer. And so he took, like, advanced calculus and, you know, algebra and, you know, he knows sine and cosine and all of that stuff. And I asked him about the Fibonacci sequence, and he was never taught it. And to me, that is just insane. That's insane. You know, you could teach the Fibonacci sequence to a fourth or fifth grader or whatever, and then they could go out in their schoolyard and look and find it.
Yeah.
You know, they could look at their hands and be like, oh, man, that's 2, 3, 5, 8 right there. You know?
Everybody,
so why isn't this stuff taught?
Everybody who draws a snail shell. A snail shell. I mean, there it is right there, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, and how many? And we were talking about earlier about that the ratio of phi, which is found in the Fibonacci sequence, 1.618, is found in a pentagram. It's found in a star, right? So it's like the small part of the star is 0.618, and the larger part is 1, you know, et cetera. Well, how many children just, you know, subconsciously or whatever, when they're doodling, draw stars? They do it all day long.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, okay, as soon as they do that, if you actually were trying to teach these children how to understand their world, you could say, hey, little Jimmy, look at that right there. You know what that is? That's phi. Let's go learn about it. And then let's go look at a sunflower. And then let's go look at your hand. And then let's look at your human body. You know, and then why? You know, why is this important? Because then they can once again find meaning in their life, you know.
I think in
just providing simple structure for thought to grow from.
Absolutely.
I think think in education that the Fibonacci sequence has kind of been hijacked by the creationists, because in this country anyway, it's the creationists who are teaching phi, because they're saying, well, this is evidence of an intelligent God, so to speak. And so it's kind of been hijacked in that way.
Has it really?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh. Huh. So, wow.
Sad, right?
Yeah, it is pretty sad.
Because then ultimately you're just led to religion rather than...
Yeah.
Critical thinking.
Rather than it leading you to critical thinking and seeing the big wow in life.
Yeah, I mean, because I deal directly with theological concepts, you know, I mean, I basically am in one respect, kind of promoting the ideas of God, an intelligent force behind creation. Well, as soon as you bring that up to, once again, our modern, you know, the intellectual climate, the paradigm, you know, you bring up God, it's like they automatically go to this literalist interpretation of what that means, you know, and it's like, therefore, now you're, you know, there's this like false dichotomy that's created between, you know, religious literalism and science, you know, and it's like, well, I think that dichotomy or that dialectic is bullshit. You know, why do I have to choose side? Why is it Democrat, Republican, paper, plastic? You know, why is it God or evolution? You know, to me, I think that this is a false dichotomy. And I think it's actually doing us an enormous harm in our intellectual and philosophical and semantical pursuits.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, unfortunately, you're breaking down the control system there. When you do that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the reason that that's created is because we are unified, and we all know it. Divide and conquer. That's how it works.
Absolutely.
You divide the people, and then you can conquer them. You don't have to worry about, hurting the people if they're doing it themselves. You don't need to worry about policing the people if they're policing themselves, because, you know, it's, you know, left versus right, you know. And this is where I think theological concepts and then sacred geometric or just geometric concepts are very important. You know, if you have 2 points, you only have 2 points on a line. That's all you get. It's back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. If you have 3 points, you get a space, a plane, a space for movement. Therefore you can move your ideas around, if you will. And this is, once again, that's just simple geometry, you know, and that's, what is it? Three becoming one. That's Odin, Frey, and Thor, Isis, Osiris, Horus, you know, Shiva, Brahman, and Vishnu, etc.
Yep,
there it is.
I'll just try to find the clip there again.
What's that?
That's a magic number.
You know, the band Blind Melon did a cover of that, which is awesome.
Yeah. Oh, the song itself's amazing.
Oh, it's great. I love it, yeah. So. So, yeah, when you take the literalism away from the concepts of God and, you know, really show that everything that's being expressed in these ancient texts, whether it's the Holy Bible or the Mahabharata or the Zohar, things like that, it's like it really helps you understand your world. I mean, what is three becoming one? Well, it's, you know, it's Father, Son, the Holy Spirit. That's what it means. Okay, or is it past, present, and future becoming, converging on the one grand unified moment, the big wow that is happening right now, you know? You teach somebody the ideas of a philosophical and geometric concept of three becoming one. Well, you can just see it plain as day. You're living in it right now. You know,
it's the three-legged stool your fat ass sits on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, yeah. I mean, the supreme balance of a bar stool. Yeah, it's done by three legs. You know.
Yeah.
And the possibilities of the crystals and resurrection of the spirit for man to become upstanding. You know what I mean? Like the five-pointed star is one way. You can have it upside down as a representation of man born into earth and time and locked in this space, and then man reborn in this earth with the five-pointed star facing upwards as man who has resurrected and gone through the process to be whole. Does that make sense?
No, it does absolutely. I mean, there's a profound spiritual, there's profound spirituality and psychology behind these things. You know, I mean, even just the, like everything you were just saying, the idea of an inverted pentagram, you know, thinking about it that way is, I think there's absolute validity in that. You know, and the other thing about people that, you know, they'll look at an inverted pentagram or whatever and be like, oh, that represents the devil or something like that. Well, the point I like to make is that, yeah, but that's only because you're looking at it from Earth. If you go up to heaven, that thing is just right side up and there's nothing wrong with it, you know? And so this is, now we're into as above, so below. Everything that's above is below, you know? One of the most fundamental philosophical constants of all philosophy and theology, you know? Why? Because it's true, you know?
Definitely, yeah. So you've been reading a lot of Morals and Dogma then. Have you finished the whole thing?
I have like 20 pages left to go. Yeah, it's taken me like 3 months.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not that fast of a reader either. And I really like to try to absorb when I'm reading. So
yeah.
I was like, well, you know, at some point I got to tackle this book. And so I did. And I love it. I think it's a fantastic book. I mean, I you hear all of these things about Albert Pike being a, you know, Satanist and, you know, some demagogue or whatever, and part of the Illuminati, New World Order, and it's like, okay, maybe, but that book is fantastic. I mean, it's just page after page of just absolute wonderful information, uplifting the spirit, you know, taking, you know, he talks about teaching the ignorant, being noble, being, you know, a divine human being, you know, representing the best of humanity and all of that stuff. It's just loaded. So yeah, I love it. So I would actually probably put it on one of my top 10 books now. So
everyone I know who's read it has given it high praise.
Yeah,
definitely.
Well, basically,
wow. Now see, as a Swami, okay, a certified world recognized holy human being, in my understanding of that book, the first thing I think of is Luciferian guy. You know?
Well, Lucifer, I mean, we know that Lucifer just means light bringer. And of course, light, L-U-C, comes from Latin L-U-X, which is light. So it means bringer of light. That's what Lucifer means. So if he is talking about Luciferianism, he's talking about bringing light. And light has always been the force of the creator, truth, wisdom, love, you know, that sort of thing. And so people
But the term Luciferian today in the conspiracy theory realm,
sure,
that's what I'm saying. That's what people, I think, if you went to, okay, like our audience at the Free Your Mind conference, if you just said Albert Pike and then spoken the way you just did about that book, they would have no clue, unless they'd read it, that all that was in there. You know, the common meme about Albert Pike is Luciferian guy.
Sure.
Satanic.
Yeah.
You know?
Satanic, yeah. And that's unfortunate.
Wouldn't that suggest that people need to read the book to have a direct experience of it?
But it's like people kind of believing that Jesus is the savior and the devil is the bad guy. You know, it's just something that you're kind of brought up with, and it's that same kind of way of thinking, really. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's just a dogmatic way of thinking about things, and he unfortunately is victim to that.
And most Christians haven't read the book.
No, right?
No, absolutely not.
Yeah. In fact, I don't have many Mason friends or anything like that, but a vast majority of the Masons that I do know, they don't know anything about Albert Pike. They don't know anything about geometry. You know, I think most of them nowadays that join Freemasonry are just in it for an old boys club, you know.
Yeah.
Bad coffee and contracts, I've heard people say.
Bad coffee and contracts. That's funny. you know, there's been a perversion of our language. You know, I mean, the reason that people associate Luciferianism or a Lucifer with the devil is because it's the perversion of our language, you know, with Lucifer meaning light bringer. And we know that, you know, God said, let there be light. Well, it's like that's an extremely positive term that's been, you know, like I said, perverted or distorted, you know. And I always like to make the point, I was like, Lucifer means light bringer. Okay, if you were a big fan of cupcakes and my name was Cupcake Bringer, would you be like, put a hex on him, he's a witch? You know, it's like, come on, let's be reasonable about this. Let's be adult
about
this.
Well, and for any decent mystic, who is actually directly experiencing the inner worlds, when that light first shows up in your head, mm-hmm. that's kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, that's a new what is going on here kind of thing, you know, and it only moves on from there, you know.
Yeah, the first time that I'd ever, like, seen the light, if you will, was I spent some time in a sensory deprivation tank. I used to go a couple times a month when I could afford it anyway. They have one in my mm-hmm. in the town I live in right now. And I was never good at meditation. I would try to meditate for 20 minutes, half hour, something like that. And I'm not even a habitual meditator at all. But I went to the sensory deprivation tank, and that was a fantastic experience.
Mm-hmm.
That was it was the first time I'd ever really had an out-of-body experience. And then I realized, I was like, oh, there might be some, you know, there might be some legitimacy to this whole, you know, meditation thing. So, mm-hmm. yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, that the first time that I saw that was very, well, illuminating.
Yes, see, it's a big deal. I mean, you know, and that is the light coming to you right inside your own noggin. Welcome to it. You know, now go reach around and see what's in there, you know.
Yeah, make the exploration, you know.
Get up in your plan.
That's what enlightenment is about.
Clues in the name.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and so much of the, you know, the how to understand our world is found in the language in and of itself. You know, like how to understand what enlightenment is. Well, ment comes from mentis, which means mind. Light, we all know what light is, and N is a phonetic sound for, well, heaven. You know, it's a sound for Anunnaki, N is heaven. So you see the light of heaven that's within the mind of man. That's what enlightenment is. Go find it. It's there. The word's
right.
telling you
it's just
there.
Sitting there waiting for you to find it. It's not going to jump up and down and draw your attention.
No. Nope.
It's hiding behind the third hair to the left on the back of your skull. Now, you know, okay, here, try this. Try this, Marty. Look at your own eyes. You cannot do it. You can with a reflection only, but mm-hmm. the seeing cannot be seen, you know? The eyes cannot look at themselves. The mind cannot think about itself. You have to move outside of the limitations of both the physical body and the externally focused thought processes before you come into any contact with anything of great importance, you know? Once you can get outside of those limitations, it's unlimited, and it's real, and it's yours right now. You're just not doing it.
Yeah, I mean, and this is, yeah, I mean, this is one of the reasons that the occult is always shunned. You know, I mean, the occult is, you know, what is the occult? It's the hidden. Well, that's going within the self. That's what it means. You know, and people that are like fearful of the occult and things like that, that are like, oh, the occult, esoteric ideas, metaphysics, oh, that's all bullshit. I'm a man of science. Well, guess what science is doing? They're the biggest occult, you know, study in the world. I mean, what are they doing? They're going into the heart of an atom and finding, you know, entanglement and superposition and Heisenberg's uncertainty principle. Well, that's occultism. You're going into the hidden. They're all occultists.
Back to
when you look at the word, you know.
Yeah, back to
the great yogis have said what we look at every day is a seamless holographic monism.
Yeah. Monism being the oneness, yeah.
Right, and if you, and then go look at the quantum mechanics. The wave is not a particle until it's under observation.
Yeah.
It remains wave, just wave, that's it. The individuation does not occur until observation hits. Upon observation, individuation takes place. Go back before that, and it's all the same damn thing. Just appearing different under observation.
Yeah, I mean the observer effect is obviously very important, and I think it's quite a shame that any sort of philosophical or spiritual ponderings on this, on the implications of quantum physics and things like that, is basically shunned by, you know, modern theory, modern scientists. Right. Like, oh, you're a woo peddler is basically, you know, what they call it or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think that's absolutely irresponsible. You're telling me that I can't philosophically consider these things or theologically consider these things? You know, if I'm out selling, you know, if I'm doing a presentation and, you know, charging people $158 at the door, that might be a little different story. You know, if I'm selling the answers, quote unquote, but to philosophically or like theologically ponder on these things, I think it's necessary, you know,
right.
Fulcanelli, actually, you know, the guy that wrote Mystery of the Cathedrals, mm-hmm. this was like back in, I think, 1930 or something like that. He was talking about this long before, you know, quantum physics was really even known. What he says, I've got the quote right here.
Before Max Planck, you know.
Yeah. This is from Fulcanelli. You will not be aware that in present-day official science, the part played by the observer becomes more and more important. Relativity, the principles of indeterminacy, demonstrates the extent to which the observer today intervenes in all these phenomena. That was Fulcanelli back in the day saying that.
Right.
You know,
right.
And yet now we have that exact same idea.
And that's quantum physics.
And that's quantum
Ta-da!
Physics.
Ta-da!
You know?
It's like governments and things like that as well, because they only exist by the amount of energy that we give them and the amount of focus we give them. If people just turned away and just started getting on with their own thing, then they would have no power. They wouldn't.
That's why misdirection is so key to what they do. If there's going to be an us and them, them is the ones that's hiding stuff behind a curtain. And we are the ones who are going, oh, yeah, see all this? Look at this. This is cool. Right, come here. Let me show you this part, you know? I mean, simple. We're not looking for people's money. We just want you to wake up, see what's around you all the time. It's not a secret. It's just right there.
And it wouldn't
inside
be
inside your own head.
Yeah, you know, and it wouldn't be so difficult if we hadn't, you know, if we hadn't spent 12 years in a state-run education.
Wow.
You know, I mean, basically we have the molding of our, you know, neural network by a government that doesn't teach you about, I mean, basically, you know, the subjects that I study are completely dismissed in
right.
modern academia, modern scientific theory, you know, alchemy, sacred geometry, numbers as symbolism, astrology or astrotheology, you know, theological concepts, philosophy, all of these things are basically completely dismissed. And yet if you taught these things, the very simple principles behind these things to children, they would get it like that.
You bet.
You know? And then
And in a generation, there would be an enormous change.
An enormous change, absolutely. I mean, you just think about if, you know, the children that are being brought up right now are taught these things. What's going to happen in 2020?
Imagine the technology they could come up with.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, we would live in a different world, a completely different world.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. If we taught the classic education system and meditation under the guidance of someone who knows what the hell they're doing, in one generation, the world would totally shift. If we just, you know, arrest the financial manipulators, because every country on the planet has laws against what they're doing. Just arrest them. Iceland disease, they call it.
No.
So let's do that. Replace them with benevolent humans. And we change everything real quick.
Well, you know, I just did a video on the preamble of the Constitution, you know, and in the United States here, if you talked about revolting, revolution, overthrowing the government, you're labeled a terrorist. You could be
right.
locked up without habeas corpus, you know, the NDAA, the Patriot
right.
Act, all of these things. And yet this is exactly what it says in the Declaration of Independence, that we are.
But it is our duty.
It is our duty, our moral responsibility.
Yes.
You know, here, look, I got a quote here. I got to find this quote here.
Sure.
It basically comes from Abraham Lincoln. It says here, if I have it,
that's all right.
This country with its institutions belongs to the people who inhabit it. Whenever they shall grow weary of the existing government, they can exercise their constitutional right of amending it or exercise their revolutionary right to overthrow it. Thomas Jefferson, let's look at this one. And what country can preserve its liberties if its rulers are not warned from time to time that its people preserve the spirit of resistance? Let them take arms. The tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants. Thomas Jefferson. You know, so here's, you know, two of our past, you know, founding fathers, if you will, and they're saying, hey, when shit hits the fan, you got to revolt.
Yeah.
You have to take arms. You have to overthrow your government. That's what they're saying. That's not my mouth. I'm not saying that.
Right.
You know,
we have a similar thing here with the Magna Carta, which has got a section on lawful rebellion, which says you must sort of rebel if the system is failing. You must
Article 61.
Article 61?
Yeah.
Well done, Sonny. You
nice.
Googled that, didn't you?
That's seven.
Yeah. I just remember the John Harris videos.
Yeah.
Sure.
That's what I was thinking from myself. So,
yeah. I mean, with Mark Passio really, he came out too with his presentation at the Pre-Ryan conference was fantastic. But he does the natural law seminar.
Yeah.
And he talks about, oh, there's natural laws that you have, you know, basically, I mean, I kind of bring it down to the, once again, to the language, that you basically have three authorities in your life. And that's who authored you. Who authored the rights? You have rights because somebody authored the rights. Who authored you? God, the creator, the great mystery, the great spirit, the grand architect, whatever you want to call it, Allah, Jehovah, Yahweh, whatever the hell it is you believe, that authored you. Nature authored you. Your parents authored you. So they are your authorities until you become old enough to become your own authority because you author your life. So those are your only three authorities: God, your parents, and you. Anyone that's claiming to be an authority over you is just fiction. It's fallacy. It's false. It's bullshit.
Is that demi?
You know. And it is also then at one point you only have two authorities, and that's God and you. Because at one point you become old enough to become your own authority, and therefore your parents are no longer your authority. When does that happen? Well, nature tells you when it happens. That's when you go through puberty, you know? That's when you can author other people. So therefore, that is, you know, when you, and this is, of course, why you have bar mitzvahs and bat mitzvahs and, you know, when, you know, tribes and things like that, when they initiate the child into,
right.
to become an adult or a man, yeah, you know, they go off their vision quest or whatever. That happens around 13, 15 years old, because that's when nature tells you that you are an adult. We
now
actually
it's time for you to kill a lion and raise a child, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the word author sounds very similar to.
Mm. Well, it means to write your own
authorize,
gospel.
Yeah.
Write your own gospel, or someone else will write it for you.
Mm. And isn't AU the symbol for gold?
Yep.
AU. Yeah.
AU. Oh.
Yeah. So you have literally gold Thor.
Gold.
That's what author breaks down to. You know, it's the gold. What's the gold? Of course, it's the light of truth. It's the light of the sun. It's the golden, you know, the lion-heartedness. And then, of course, what's Thor? That's the god, you know.
It is the light within your own head.
Yeah.
And he has
you own it. It's there with you all the time. Look for it. You will learn. You will intuit. It's natural. The great knowledge is not delivered by books. It's intuited. It always has been. The great thinkers didn't copy that stuff out of a book. It came out of their mind, which is a larger prospect.
I think even Plato said, I was just on a podcast and somebody had mentioned this, that Plato said all learning is relearning. That we're really basically is the idea of going within the self, and that the answers reside in the self.
Yes.
You know, liber, which where we get liberation, liberty, that sort of thing, actually means book in Latin. So it's like, oh, where does liberation come from? Well, it comes from books. No. The book that they're talking about is the book of life. That's you.
Yes.
You know, that's why books have spines, because the you know that the book of life is you. You know, so.
And what happens when you rip a book's spine out? It falls apart.
Exactly. Yeah. So there's, really just shows like the occult or esoteric nature of our world. Even the deep symbolism behind the simple binding of a book. You know, It's really, it's, I mean, there's a deep message there. I mean, you don't even have to open it up.
It's and every scripture, all it really does to those who know, to the mystics, who are the knowers, the ones who have gnosis, because they are experiencing it directly and consciously within themselves. And everyone can do it. The book points you inward, not outward. The books are there to remind us and to give us things to contemplate and take within so that we can learn the real knowledge. That's what it's all for. It's not about chasing and owning a big-ass library of dusty tomes. It's sit down, be quiet, focus on that which is already right there inside your head right now. Don't forget about it and chase the shiny, pretty stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the most amount of, like, learning that I've done, I would say, has been on by myself hiking, you know, alone,
right,
just in that contemplative meditative state.
Yeah.
That's where I think the most, like, revelations, I guess you could say, or whatever, epiphanies have come to me. And which is, you know, listen, somebody posted this on my Facebook page, listen and silent are anagrams for one another.
Yes.
Oh, really? Wow.
Isn't that interesting?
That's brilliant. Yeah.
Listen to the silence.
And then you
Sonic and I were talking about this on the show yesterday.
Yeah.
On my show, Meditative Living, where, you know, there's this point, this zero point that contains both the inner and the outer, the above and the below, in one point of silence. Hit that. Sit there. And everything becomes the same and accessible. You can do it. You're just not doing it yet. That's it.
Yeah, I mean, that's that central node, that balancing point that's within you. I mean, that is the balance of the as above and so below. How do we find the infinite? Well, it's in the finite. The word is telling you. You know, that exactly. Are you going to argue with that? Like, how can you even argue with that? The word itself is telling you what you need to do. You know?
Yeah. Another beautiful word that you broke down for me in your book was the one-line poem, The Universe.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Once again, what, you know, the word is telling you what it is. It's unified, and it's a line of poetry. So what is this world? Well, think about it this way. I'm about to do a video on billiards, and I'm gonna cover this idea. When we go through a symbolic in our mind, the creation of our world. Well, of course, it was already created. So what we're doing is in our mind going through a recreation of the world. Recreation means recreation. It's the same word. Mm-hmm. What is recreation? Well, it's enjoyment. It's fun. It's thriving. It's truly living. It's enjoying. It's living. It's laughing. It's that, you know, it's those sorts of things. So what does the creator who made the creation, well, how did he do it? It did it creatively. So in order to be one with the creation, what do you have to do? Well, recreate, recreate, be
find
creative,
bliss.
Enjoy. Yeah, find your bliss. You know, that's what the creator wants you to do. That's what this thing was made for. You know, once again, that's just in the language.
Mm-hmm. So.
I wish we'd have spent more time talking it free your mind, Marty.
I didn't get a chance to talk to a lot of people, unfortunately. I mean, I was talking to so many people, like, you know, the people that were at the, you know, that I didn't even get to see a lot of the, like, I wanted to see Lennon Honor's speech. I didn't get a chance to see that. And, you know, I didn't get to see a lot of
people.
You know,
they're up now.
I started watching a few of them. So I really like Lennon Honor. I think he's a good dude, man.
Yeah.
He's just an overall, you know, upstanding human being. Honorable human being.
Honorable,
yes, totally.
He's certainly done his research. I'll give him that.
Yeah, yeah. He's really proud of being of an upstanding father, you know, and really wanted to bring his kids up correctly. And I just think that's so noble. Mm-hmm. So, and we don't see a lot of that.
And what other task is so plainly before us all?
Yeah, I mean, if you are going to be a father, I am not. If you're going to be, then you need to embrace it, and that's the only thing that you should do. You know, is bring your kids up right, truth, and honor and wisdom and, you know, and integrity, love, you know.
If he produces five more like him, he's done a great thing.
Yeah.
Do you think he will create some children, Marty?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. It hasn't happened yet, so. I mean, I was always in the opinion of that it was just going to happen. I was just going to end up getting somebody pregnant, you know, because that's usually what happens to most people. But it hasn't happened.
That's how you do it.
But I actually just split up with my longtime partner of like 11 years. So now I'm a single man. But.
As one door closes.
Yeah, another door opens, right?
Is that why you?
Well, I was born cesarean, but you really can't tell except for the fact every time I leave a building, I go out the window.
I was born cesarean too. Yeah.
That's not true. I made that up, by the way.
Oh, okay.
I've been up my name. I've got quite a long name, Nicholas James Barclay Aitchison, and that adds up to 95, which then is 14, and then 5, so my name's balanced.
Yeah. Wow.
Sure.
Actually, and
but you can't put it on a business card.
No.
I did actually have all of our names done up in the notes that I gave away to my friend.
Oh, no.
I gave Darren the two books of Marty's. Do his research, and Scott Onslaught's book as well. Taking measure.
Oh yeah, Scott's just fantastic, man. Yeah. I think I'm going to get to meet him in person in August. We're doing a conference together, which I'm excited for. I just think the world of Scott. I think he does fantastic work. He's got a he's just a smart dude, open-minded. You know, both of his videos, Secrets in Plain Sight 1 and 2, are fantastic. Uh-huh. His book is fantastic. I can't say enough good things about Scott. Yeah. So.
That was a great Always Record
Room. Yeah, I was just about to say, the Always Record you did together was fantastic. It was really, it's quite weird when, at the end, when you were talking about, you know, people actually paying for your work, and I'm sort of listening to that thinking, well, I did it. Why can't everybody else do it? Because I bought your books and Scott's book, and, well, I actually got my wife bought me for Christmas.
Oh.
And I bought his The Secrets in Plain Sight 2, and it was cheap, you know, it was nothing.
Yeah, it was like $20 or something.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even that much. In our money, I think it was £9, which is like, you know, wouldn't even buy a round of drinks.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like...
What people would be more than willing and not even think about going to a McDonald's or buying some tap at shops for probably more than, you know, your books and... Scott's books or anybody that's within this field of research, and that's, you know, the small cost is so worth more than all the plastic stuff that you can buy.
Mm.
It's going to do your life a lot more. It's going to enrich your life a lot more, isn't it? Really.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think your book, Marty, was about £10, which is like, you know, it's not going to make any difference to my life for losing £10 at all, you know, what I got.
Well, you know, I mean, it's important for me to like, you know, keep the books at a reasonable cost and give away as much information as I possibly can, because I don't think, you know, I know that there are people out there that $10 to them is a lot of money. Like, I know I have a friend on Facebook, I think she has like 2 or 3 kids. Her, you know, her husband left her, and she's, you know, working off one job, you know, can barely make it. And she probably can't afford to buy my books or whatever. So I want to make sure that there's information out that she has access to this as well. The people like that are in that position have access as well. But if you do have enough money to afford, please do. You know, I mean, I give away all the videos for free. The interviews are all for free. You can listen to my records for free. You can download 2 of my records for absolutely free. I've got a free blog on worldmysteries.com. You know, it's like there's so much information out that I feel like it's absolutely I have a responsibility to give this information for free. Then also it's like, hey, man, if you can help me out, please do, because I have to eat just like you. You know, I've got to put a roof over my head just like you, you know.
Right. Absolutely. Are you got a YouTube presence? what are you doing with that?
We just go to MartyLeeds33.com, and it all comes from there.
Yeah, or Marty Leeds on YouTube. Marty Leeds 33 on YouTube. So, yeah, I have, I think, like 40 or 50 videos up for free. They're all lectures on a bunch of different subjects, like the Great Cross at Henday and the Zodiac and the 12 Disciples and Genesis 1-1. And, I mean, I just cover a bunch of different subjects and all the ways that we can look at numerology and gematria. So, and the next one I'm doing, I'm really excited about, is billiards.
Yeah, that's quite a thing to be doing.
I'm so excited for it too, because I just couldn't believe it all worked out the way it did. I just redid the math, and I kept looking at this, and it was just, I'm super excited for it anyway.
Well, that's interesting, because in billiards you've got a cue ball with a dot in it, which is basically a manure, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I mean, the cue ball in and of itself, I'm going to cover this, is the monad, when looking at it in one respect, and this is the idea of putting, you know, the compass, putting the tip
down.
Sorry,
monad, go on.
Yeah, yeah. And then, of course, if you took that dot and made it a line, you know, basically like a pole, that would be in two dimensions, pi. Well, cue ball, Q-C-U-E, is 365, or the 365 days of the solar year. Of course, what color is the cue ball? It's white. So we're talking about the white, the great white light of the Creator, that white light that gets split into the spectrum of the seven colors. Ball, B-A-L-L, is 2122. This equals seven. So cue ball is 365 of Q, and then ball is seven, and seven of, in and of itself encodes pi. S-E-V-E-N is 65551 equals 22. 22 divided by the word seven is 3.142. So, that's just one thing that you can do with billiards, and it's just, just amazing.
You've also got two white balls and a red ball, yeah? And that's your Mars thing, your destructive energy, which means you have to destroy it to create.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's deep symbolism in billiards, too, because you basically, you know, it's, once again, it's recreation, it's leisure, it's fun, it's an enjoyable activity. What you're doing is taking all of those balls and putting them into a formation, right?
Yeah.
And then, of course, that formation is the holy triangle underneath the triangle. So then you take off the rack or whatever, right? And then what's the first thing you do? You have to break the formation in order to play the game. Yep. You know what I mean? In order to start to enjoy, you have to break that formation. And then what's the last thing you do in the game? Well, you sink the eight ball. Well, pi in the cipher is pi is 3, 5, and it equals 8. So not only do the cue ball encodes pi, the geometry of it in and of itself encodes pi, encodes the monad, ball encodes pi. The last thing you do in the game is sink the eight ball, which is, of course, white, light over dark.
Yeah.
And also
the infinity symbol.
Yeah.
And the infinity symbol, yeah.
So you're actually talking about pool then, you're not talking about the game billiards.
Yeah, exactly.
We're not talking about bloke billiards. We're talking about American pool here.
Yeah. There's a game called
Billiards, which says the table has no pockets in it. And the game centers around you hitting all the balls at once. So you've got you've got to get three hits to make a score. It's quite an interesting game.
It's got like little tops on the board, isn't it?
No, that's bar billiards. Billiards is just a plain table with no pockets, just four sides, a rectangle, three balls on it. Maybe you should look that up, Marty, and sort of do something on that, because it is quite, you know, thinking. You just made me think about that, because I've just read this chapter about the Martian, you know how in the animal kingdom and the plant kingdom, things have to destroy before they create, and that's your Mars energy. So given you've got a red ball and these two white balls, it's, you know, just made me go off on a tangent there, sorry.
Oh, no, it's all right. Billiards and, like, pool and all of that is, I think there's been an evolution of the game for a long time. Because, I think the original table did not have any pockets.
No.
What we call, you know, standard American pool here has obviously the six pockets and things like that. So, And I believe it started in, like, kings and queens and things like that. It was basically, like, the royalty.
Yeah.
It was a game for the royalty. And then it was, you know, passed on to us commoners. all of these games that I've been looking into, like dice and chess and pool and all of these things, you know, it's just super interesting. You know, there's esotericism behind all of them, and that's why they've lasted.
And dominoes as well.
Yeah, that's something I have to look into. Two of the ones I want to look into are dominoes and then the dartboard as well.
What's full of it?
Yeah, it's got to be. I mean, it's basically a monad. That's what you're looking
Absolutely. You know? Yeah. So. I'm sure Dennis Dech has done something on the dartboard before. I'm sure.
Has he?
Yeah. If you go, what's his site? It's called the Illuminus Informer or something.
Yeah, the Illuminatus Observer, I think.
Illuminatus Observer, yeah. That site is just brilliant. There's so much on that.
Yeah, I haven't really looked into Dennis's stuff too much. The first time I had heard of him was through Scott Onstott, actually. Scott was he was editing my first book, and he said, "Hey, you got to check out Dennis Fetcho." And so I ended up putting at the last minute, almost putting his breakdown of Pi in there, which Pi the Great Works no longer in print anyway. But yeah, I looked into his Isisian codes, which I wasn't too impressed with as far as like the gematria to it, but because it seemed like a lot of force fitting. But I know, I mean, Dennis does good work as far as I know. A lot of his esoteric breakdowns and things.
Absolutely.
So.
The esoteric breakdown of Humpty Dumpty, for instance, is very fascinating.
He's got a video on that, doesn't he?
He has, yeah, it's brilliant. I'll drop the link into the chat for all of us.
I think somebody just sent me it, and I got to look at it yet. So.
I've just put his site in the chat there for anyone who wants to open it. Yeah, do have a look at that. So it's your new book. Let's have a chat with that. The Peacock's Tales, is it called?
Yeah, the Peacock's Tales, The Alchemical Writings of Claudia Pavonis. It's Claudia Pavonis is the pseudonym that I adopted. It's a female pseudonym that I adopted in my writing. Mm-hmm. And I kind of go over why I ended up adopting a female pseudonym and like the kind of the psychology behind that, that sort of thing. So, and then I basically go and I cover, I cover Jesus Christ again, the numerical breakdown of that.
Bless you, Marty. We appear to have lost Marty for a minute, but I'm sure he'll be back. Why don't we listen to a bit of Marty's music? Would you like that?
Yes, please.
This one is called Passion and Desire by Marty Leeds.
passion and desire will they'll burn you like a fire and tie you till your soul when you can't take no more. And they may just steal your heart.
That was Passion and Desire by Marty Leeds from his new album, which is called Opus Medico Musica. And very, very lovely and mellow. He does some other stuff as well, which is sort of acoustic-y, rocky stuff. He's a very talented boy, and unfortunately we've lost him for the moment. But hopefully he'll get back to us by the end of the show, which we don't have a lot of time. We've got half an hour to go, so hopefully he'll make it back. I'll try and give him another call.
Should we have another tune then, maybe?
We could do, yeah.
Why not?
I did actually load up Laterals, but that's 30 minutes long, so probably not a good idea to play that.
Well, maybe, as it's the 20th anniversary of Kurt Cobain's death, we could have a bit of Nirvana.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah.
There you go. That'd be great.
Yeah, go on.
Here's Heart-Shaped Box.
That's for you, Norma.
Oh,
heart-shaped box by Nirvana. I just done Kurt Cobain's numerology using Marty's system, and you never guess what it fucking works out to.
5, 7.
Ah.
Is that including his proper first name?
Kurt Cobain, yeah.
Has he got another first name?
I don't know.
Well,
Kurt Cobain works out to 34, which is 7.
Uh-huh.
It's 3557322151, which is 34, which boils down to 7. So he was one of the 7. He was a very enlightened soul, with old Kurt.
And then he joined the 9s.
And then he joined the 9s, yeah. We joined the 27 Club, didn't he?
Yeah, which is 27.
Yeah, which is 9, absolutely, yeah. I've been reading David McGowan's stuff, as I told you before.
Wow.
And he's actually come across some information which Courtney Love's father used to manage the Grateful Dead.
Really?
How fucking weird is that? And, I mean, there was another documentary. Was it Nick Bloom? Did we discuss this before? Who made these documentaries about Kurt and Courtney. And it transpired that her father gave her LSD when she was like 9 or something like that. And if he was manager of the Grateful Dead, then hello, that sort of a...
Yeah, that's kind of breakfast, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And he was from the military as well. So, you know, a little side. Because he managed the Grateful Dead after they were, you know, sort of big news when they were sort of, you know, just an institution rather than a hit band of the 60s. It was in the 70s that he managed them or looked after them or whatever it was. Fucking crazy though, or what?
And they did have the their logo was the Dancing Bears, didn't they?
Right.
Did they?
Yeah. I don't think that came over here as much, but definitely when I went to America. The Dancing Bears was just on everything.
All right. I just remember the skull with the sort of lightning bolt coming out of it.
Yeah.
The dead
head
sort of like.
And it was sort of, the Dancing Bears are sort of in like a circle, but all holding things. Is that right, Swami?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sure I've got Google search.
All sort of symbology there in the.
Absolutely. Well. Bob Weir is now a member of the Bohemian Club.
Oh, is that right?
Hangs out. But two of the other surviving ones also are Bohemian Grove members.
Wasn't Jerry Garcia before he died as well?
Probably. Well, I mean, Jerry Garcia was CIA. There's no question about it. And right. the CIA were told, or they, there was a memo put out.
Oh, that was FBI.
Sorry. There was a memo put out by the CIA saying, do not touch the Grateful Dead because they are our property.
FBI, not CIA.
Yeah, but the CIA...
FBI said, do not arrest them.
Oh, was it the FBI? Oh, beg your pardon.
Right.
I heard the CIA.
No problem.
Anywho's...
Let the Grateful Dead go. They're doing their job.
Yeah.
Whatever it is they're doing their job.
They're spreading the word of... You know what we want to do. Something. That's a shame he lost Marty. He's great.
He was just.
No, I can't wait to hang out with him at Free Your Mind 3.
Yeah, I still want to go to Free Your Mind 3.
You gonna go?
Yeah. Well, potentially it'd be a few months of saving after Australia.
Australia, yeah. Well, it's 2015, is it?
Yeah. So it'd be.
It'll be in Philly again at the Sheridan. I can't recall which Sheridan. There might be more than one Sheridan in Philadelphia, but yeah, we might be in the mobile ashram by then.
All right, just a new plan.
Well, it's a plan that's going to fit in between now and Belize.
Hmm.
We're hoping to get a motorhome.
Right.
And travel around the country and visit with the disciples I'm working with and do yeah, you know, go see the biggest ball of string and, you know, stuff like that. And do speeches and give Shakti and, you know, all that stuff.
All good.
Before we go to Belize.
Yeah. I've just seen it.
Then we can sell the, then we'll sell the motorhome and move to Belize.
Awesome.
You can just drive there, couldn't you?
No.
Well, it's possible.
That's
but
a long old drive.
Go to Mexico.
Yeah.
Not really wanting to do a long drive through Mexico.
No.
It's not. Not very safe thing to do.
No, 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 no.
Especially in an expensive motorhome. Right. Plus, HH said, no, you're not doing that.
I've just seen the Dancing Bear logo, and it's actually as above, so below. It's pointing upwards and downwards. The Grateful Dead.
All right.
Yeah. Crazy shit. Crazy shit. Did you ever see the Dead, Swami?
I went to a Dead show once, and I never went into the show. I was having so much fun in the parking lot.
Me too.
That,
never left the parking lot.
Yeah, I just was tripping on acid and having a good time in the parking lot.
That sounds exactly like me with Hawkwind.
Yeah, that was back in the 80s, yeah.
Yeah, I went to see Hawkwind three times.
That was out.
I went to see Hawkwind three times and I've never actually seen them.
I've seen them loads and
saw the boss.
Yeah. I was there. Well, I kinda heard them in the background, but I never actually saw.
I've seen lots of people at Hawkwind gigs on acid.
Yeah. I smelt the patchouli oil, put it that way.
You know, patchouli is what we've named our bug.
Your bug?
We drive a Volkswagen.
Oh, a Volkswagen, right, right. And you call it patchouli.
We named it patchouli. It's green.
Yeah, well, we...
It's not a lemon, it's a lime.
We have a very strange... We have a middle chamber here in our kitchen in our house in the lounge. We put an extension on our house, and the downstairs toilet no longer has a window on it because the wall we built sort of covered it, if you know what I'm saying, sort of thing.
Right, right.
So, as a rule of thumb, because you know what happens in toilets,
well, sure.
we always burn incense, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Sort of thing. And Firecheck hates it when I buy the patchouli one because it just... Because it's quite strong, isn't it?
The coconut's the best.
That's but the coconut, well, I think opium's the best. We use one called opium, which is really, really lovely.
Yeah,
I like the jasmine.
That was...
What I wear patchouli essential oil. That's what I wear as a scent.
You can smell it now.
Quite proper for a Swami.
Yeah, it's very proper for a Swami, yeah. Indeed, scent for sure.
I wear it just
because
I like it.
Yeah, I like it. Fychik doesn't. Fychik's not a fan. Well, the incense, anyway, the burning kind. I kind of agree. It's not really... It's not the nicest thing to burn.
Best. Gotta get the Nag Champa.
Nag Champa, or the Dupe. Do you know Dupe?
I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah, that's a nice one. That's really nice. Or there's, because we you know, we have a big Indian connection with my circle of friends, sort of thing, and whenever anyone comes back from India, they always bring you, like, you know, a big bag of incense.
Oh, cool.
Which costs, like, you know, a buck for about 5 tons of it.
Right.
Whereas over here, it's like a sort of couple of quid for a pack of four of them or something like that. It's ridiculous.
Right, right.
Yeah. Yeah, you know Wilf, Nick.
Yeah.
You can smell him coming, basically, can't you?
Well, by golly, when we get over there, I know where to go to get some incense.
Oh, yeah. So you still up for cutters? Norma still coming over here?
We'll see. I don't know if she's going to continue the education thing or whether we're just going to hit the road for some time and skedaddle to Belize. Mm. Just depends.
Yeah.
Haven't made that decision yet.
Yeah, Belize sounds like a winner. Did you ever, you didn't make it to Colombia then?
No. We had a situation with we couldn't find the right priest to do the ceremony. So he's going to end up Sri Atmanji is going to end up coming up here to Los Angeles to go to the temple there in L.A. to get his Swamihood ceremony done.
So did you manage to get your passport then?
Oh, I did get a passport, yes. So I'm good to travel now.
Yay.
Just need a ticket. That's it.
We just need
I can go.
Hey, Martin may be back.
Yay!
Let's give him a try. See if he'll come back and say hi. You don't have to be silent, guys.
Okay.
Yeah,
Om Namah Shivaya.
Yeah, so I'm after listening to Jay's show last week, I'm going to try and I'm going to get in touch with Rick Simpson, and see if you can do a show with Jay.
Awesome.
Marty.
I am back.
Hey,
there he is.
Complete and utter crash.
Oh, dear.
I don't know what's happening today, man. Something's in the air.
On the upside, we had a...
Yeah, you spell it NSA. 3 is a magic number, don't you know?
Yeah, exactly right.
Was that the third crash?
What? Yeah, I got it all up again. Like, went to go, like, log in, and then it crashed again. This never happens, honestly. It's so funny. So.
Well, we did have a bit of passion and desire from you, so...
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
sweet.
We played that off of Opus Mythico Musica, is that correct?
Yeah, that's it. No, thanks for playing that. Appreciate that.
No, it's
and
beautiful little song, by the way.
Yeah, lovely.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I was really, really proud of that one. So.
Who played the bass on that, yourself?
No, my friend played the bass.
Right, the excellent bass playing.
Yeah, he's a fantastic musician. Yeah, he plays keys and bass and does like auxiliary percussion, plays trombone, banjo. He's just a fantastic musician.
Right,
so.
Right. Is this the chap you were talking about earlier, the Pitch Perfect fella?
I'm sorry, what?
Is that the fella you were talking about earlier who's Pitch Perfect?
No, this is a different guy. I actually played in a very short stint anyway with the band with both of those guys. So I played bass, he played keys, and then the guy that has perfect pitch played guitar. So yeah. But, yeah, I've been growing up in the Midwest, I've been surrounded by just fantastic musicians my entire life.
Mm-hmm.
So, great drummers and great guitar players, and there's a really good musical community in the Midwest, that's for sure. So,
where'd you come up?
South of Madison, a little town called Monroe. So, yep, just on the border of Illinois and in Wisconsin. So,
I'm in Illinois myself.
Where in Illinois?
Charleston.
Oh, I know Charleston, sure.
Which is the home of Eastern Illinois University.
Mm-hmm.
Right over the state line from Terre Haute, Indiana.
Yep, sure. Yeah, I know Charleston, so cool. A Midwesterner, yeah, nice.
Absolutely.
Prisoners.
Not a whole lot of swamis out in the middle of the cornfields.
No. That's why I live in Oregon now. I had to leave the Midwest. It's just pretty stifling there. So.
Yeah, or that's quite a trek. That's the West Coast, isn't it?
Yeah, yep. It's a couple thousand miles. So mm-hmm. We just moved back here about a month ago. So.
Another song I like of yours is Modern Culture.
Oh, thanks. Yeah.
Really. Listen to all your stuff. A good something which is on your site. It's really good. I like it.
Oh, thanks. Yeah.
Talented boy. So he's been very clever.
Yeah. I mean, I just, you know, creativity was always important to me growing up, you know, being creative and writing songs and, you know, just writing in general. And then for years, I just tried to hone my craft as a songwriter and, you know, got better at it. And so now it's just something I really, really enjoy,
yeah,
as most people do.
Nice singing voice as well, really.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's so interesting. I went to eat dinner last night, and I was sitting at the bar, and I was working on one of the new projects I'm working on, and this guy just strolls up, and he starts talking to me, and I'm like, hey, and we just start chatting about guitars and things like that, and it turns out he was the guitar player for Captain Beefheart. So he starts talking. He's like, yeah, you know, Don Von Valage. I'm like, fuck yeah, I know. I was like, I couldn't believe it. Again, I just, you know, struck up this conversation with this guy. So things like that are just, I always find just fascinating, you know, when things like that happen in life, you know. So.
Well,
I'm looking forward to hanging out with you at Free Your Mind 3.
Yeah, is that going to happen? I haven't really heard
too much
about it.
April 2015 in Philly. Tuscan's going to be leading the charge on that one this time.
Oh, is he? Is Passio not going to be involved? Or
no, he's going to be doing it. He's going to be, consulting. But he told me there at number two, he was like, I'm never doing this again. I think Tuscan and JG Vibes are pretty much leading the charge on it, as far as I know.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, I haven't been officially invited or anything, but I'll definitely do it again. I enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, it was a good time, man. Outstanding. Yeah. That was my first time being at, a conference of any sort,
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
And then, the meditation sessions we did, and we did the meditation flash mob at the ley line convergence point right behind Independence Hall. The night after Ross Ben's presentation. And that was just an outstanding class.
An excellent podcast. The Middle Chamber started up again last week with Fratterix and Matterix, and they had Ross Ben on there.
Yeah.
Very good talk it was, too.
Oh, definitely.
So, Marty, when we get to Free Your Mind 3, you got to come and meditate with me for a little bit. I'll show you how you light up from the inside. I can do that for you. It's not a problem. That's what I do. Is fire up people's kundalini.
Oh, he's gone again.
Oh.
Bummer. Well, I'll still do it for him. Doesn't matter if it's today or, in 2015. Whatever.
Yeah.
Not a problem. I can do this with my eyes closed. Wait, I do it with my eyes closed.
You tell him, Norma.
Such an 8-ball, did you say to Norma?
Yeah, she's the one who gets to talk to me like that.
Oh, my God. Ain't I lucky? Yay.
Don't take that title too seriously, folks. Just a guy driving to Walmart to get toilet paper just like you.
I was thinking about you today because the section in my book I was reading now, the fifth Hebrew letter is Hev, and it's spelled HH.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
I was like, no, that's Swami.
Yep. I have His Holiness on my title. I just don't really use it. I use that to refer to my guru, but I have the same.
Yeah, His Holiness Swami.
It's on my name, but I just don't use that part.
Yep. We're a world, there's nothing that's not God.
There you go.
We're all
See
holy.
How simple that is?
Absolutely, yep. Yep. I'm getting this, Swami, I'm doing my stuff.
You're doing great.
I'm just doing my stuff.
You have made such progress without putting a tremendous amount of undue effort or anything, you're just rocking right along. I'm very, very happy to be associated with you and Fychik and Sonic and, a lot of folks who are not like disciples, at that level of participation, but still opening and learning and discussing.
Absolutely. Well, nothing gets dismissed in my vision these days, it's all relevant. And that's quite a profound little statement, there's nothing that's...
Hell yeah.
I resonate with that very, very much so. It's all good. It's all the oneness. I mean, I really enjoyed talking to Brandon the other week. That was just fantastic. It's great stuff.
Yeah, he's safely in Williams, Arizona now.
Yeah,
he was
saying it's snowing.
Yep. Well, see, he's up near Flagstaff. And there's mountains and greenery up in the north part of Arizona. Now, people generally think about, the Phoenix and Tucson areas where the big three-armed saguaro cactus and that sort of stuff is at. That's the southern part of the state. But up north, there's forests and mountains and snow, and there's ski lodges. And he's not far from the Grand Canyon. He's right on Route 66, runs right through Williams.
I'd fucking love to go to the Grand Canyon.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
And now they've got a place where there's a walkout thing, a U-shaped thing where you can walk, and it's out, it's suspended over the canyon.
Oh, wow.
So you walk out on a glass floor looking down, a mile down into the canyon.
Oh.
I mean, the Grand Canyon is so big, it doesn't look real.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
When you walk up to it, it doesn't look real.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Absolutely, yeah.
I got the opportunity once to, back when I lived in Phoenix, Arizona. I was the chapter leader and martial arts instructor of a group called the Guardian Angels, which are famous for working the subways,
yeah,
New York City, keeping people from getting mugged and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well,
anywhere people
got. Yeah. A guy named Curtis Sliwa started the Guardian,
yep,
Angels, and his mother came out to Arizona to vacation, so I was her driver and personal security. And her sister, and I took them up to Sedona and up to the Grand Canyon and got to spend a lot of time with them and just had a blast. You know?
Well,
that was
so
with
much.
Curtis Sliwa's mom.
Well, there's so much. Arizona's just responsible for so much music. There's loads of lyrics with references to Arizona in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
oh, I loved it.
By the time I get to Phoenix and the Plains of Old Sagona by the Pixies, one of my favorite songs. Amazing.
Sedona,
but anyway, guys, we're... sorry, so where are we going?
Oh, I was just saying Sedona is gorgeous. The,
yeah,
red rock areas, and my goodness, it's beautiful. I just love the state.
Nope.
Charlie Marty here.
Hello.
Oh.
Hello, Marty.
Hello?
Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Fine.
Marty, is that you?
It is.
Oh, okay. We didn't know who we were talking to. We're like, what?
I did.
Oh, okay.
Oh, you did. Well, thanks for telling us.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what's happening to my Skype. It just keeps crashing. And I never have this problem.
Well, you're
so.
Going to come and meditate with me at Free Your Mind 3, right, so I can light you up from the inside and show you what that's like without having to use the tank.
Sure.
I do that. I'm a Shaktipat master. That's what I do, is turn on people's kundalini. So we'll do that.
Nice. It sounds like a plan. So, yeah, I'm looking forward
cool.
to it. So.
Looking forward to it.
Okay, Marty, when your new book comes out, I'll buy it, I'll read it, and you'll come back on, and we'll talk about it, yeah?
Yeah, that sounds great. Yeah, I'll definitely, hopefully by the end of the year it'll be out, but we'll see. You know, so.
And so catch Marty's stuff on martyleads33.com, and thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks very much for coming on. You know, it was a pleasure to talk to you, mate, and we'll do it again sometime, yeah?
Yeah, for sure. I appreciate having me on. I really appreciate it. So, yeah, if you're anybody that's interested, yeah, Marty Leeds 33 on YouTube or MartyLeeds33.com is probably the best place. You can also like me on Facebook or whatever. I post internet memes and that sort of thing. So,
check out his Red Ice appearances because they're also very good and also always record with Scott on. So, fantastic.
And his tunes on there.
His tunes are on Reverb Nation and Amazon, all the good places you can get it. And here's a little song for you, Marty. Thanks for joining us, mate. We'll see you soon.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Three, that's a magic number.
Three.
It is. It's a magic number.
Three.
Somewhere in this hip-hop soul community was born three, they said, and that's a magic number.
What does it all mean?
Difficult preaching is possibly pleasure. Pleasure in preaching starts in the heart. Something that simulates the music in a measure. Measure in the music raises me apart. Casually see, but don't do like the soul. Cause seeing and doing are actions for monkeys. Doing hip-hop, hustle, no rock and roll. Unless your name's Brewster, cause Brewster's a punk. Parents let go cause it's magic in the air. Criticizing rap, so you're out of order. Stop looking, listen to the phrase of Fred Astaire's. And don't get offended while Mace Dosey does your daughter. A tri-camera roll system is now set. Fly around the store under Daisy production. It stands for the inner sound. Y'all in your Quebec, that the action's not a trick, but show not a function. Everybody wants to be a DJ, everybody wants to be an MC, but being speakers are the best, and you don't have to guess. Still, our full posse consists of three, and that's a magic number.
Three.
This here piece of the pie is not dessert, but the course that we dine. And 3 out of every darn time, the effect is, what a daisy grows in your mind. Showing true position, this here piece is pissing the part of the pie that's missing, where that negative number fills up the casualty. Maybe you can subtract it, you can call it your lucky partner, maybe you can call it your adjective. But odd as it may be, without my 1 and 2, where would there be my 3? Make pot for me, and that's a magic number.
What does it all mean?
Focus is formed by flaws of the soul. Souls before style gain praise by pounds. Common on speakers who honor the scroll. Scroll written daily creates a new sound. Listeners listen cause this here is wisdom. Wisdom of a speaker, a dumb and a plug. Set aside a legal substance to feed them for now. Get them high off this dialect drug. Time is a factor so it's time to count. Count not the negative actions of one. Speakers of soul say it's time to shout. Reforms the soul to a positive sum. Dance to this fix and flex every muscle. Space can be filled if you rise like my lumber. Advance to the tune but don't use the hustle, shake, rattle, roll to my magic number.
Now you may try to subtract it, but it just won't go away. 3 times 1.
What is it?
1, 2, 3.
And the magic number.